forum for frank talk about what people do for a living. Works do.
Hello, and welcome to Works Do. It's May 16th, 2011, and this is episode number 8. I'm Kate Gase Walton. I'm the editor of WorksDo.com, an online collection of essays in which people ponder their work lives. I have one quick announcement before I get to today's interview. I've lined up a veteran air traffic controller named Bob Richards to answer your questions in WorksDo's first ever interactive Q&A, meaning that Bob will be answering the questions sent in by WorksDo readers and listeners. Bob worked in the towers at Chicago's O'Hare for over 20 years and knows everything there is to know about this role that has been so much in the news lately. So if you have a question about the life and work of an air traffic controller, please send it in either by emailing me at kate@worksdo.com or by posting it on WorksDo's Facebook page. As for what's happening today, as some of you will know, on the last episode, I spoke with Mary Egan, who began her career as a teacher and then switched tracks to business. She now has the top strategy role at Starbucks. In this episode, I'll be talking to someone whose path went in the opposite direction. After 16 years in finance, Jane Vio left Wall Street to teach high school math. Here's her story. I am talking today to Jane Vio, who is a New York City teacher with what I think is a particularly interesting career path. We'll find out more about that in just a moment. But first, let me say that this has been a big week for Jane. Her AP statistics students took their AP exam, as I understand it, yesterday, and her AP microeconomics students had their exam today. So, Jane, thank you for making the time after all of that to talk to me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure, and it's been a very exciting week for the reasons that you just mentioned. The students think they did extremely well, so I'm very proud of all of them.
That is great news. So let's start first. If you could tell us, where do you teach and what subjects do you teach?
Okay, I teach at the Frederick Douglass Academy, which is a public high school located in Central Harlem at 149th and 7th Avenue. This is my 9th year there. And I'm in the mathematics department. I've taught many different courses in math. I've taught algebra and geometry and what used to be called Math A in New York. And currently I'm teaching an elective called statistics, as well as the two classes that you mentioned, advanced placement statistics, which is an AP class and it's college level, and also advanced placement microeconomics.
And so can you just tell me a little bit more about Frederick Douglass Academy. Is it just a normal public school? Does it have some sort of different track? I'm afraid I don't know much about it.
Okay, it's a regular public school. There's no academic criteria to get in at all. The school runs from 6th grade up to 12th, so it really is a combined middle school and a high school. And we have approximately 300 students per grade, so it's fairly large.
And you said you've been teaching there for 9 years.
Correct.
So one thing I wanted to dig into was you have not always been a teacher. What were you doing before that?
Okay, before I decided to switch careers and go into education, I had a 16-year career in real estate finance. I worked at various companies, the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company and their real estate investment department, also at Fitch IPCA, which is one of the four largest rating agencies, and then also I worked at Merrill Lynch in their investment banking division.
So your switch from finance to teaching long predates the financial crisis, so it clearly
Yes.
wasn't that prompted you to make the move. What was it that prompted you to switch?
It really was sort of a epiphany and sort of a life-changing, maybe you could call it an early midlife crisis moment for me. It was really when I turned 35 and I started to take stock in my life and think about what sort of impact I was leaving and what I was doing with my life. And I came up a little bit empty. What I was doing at the time was extremely interesting. It was very intellectually challenging. It was very exciting. A lot of people would have looked at my resume and said that I was very successful in some of the ways society measures success, but I didn't feel like I was doing anything meaningful. And so I started to look around at different things. That year, I happened to do a 275-mile bike ride for charity that was raising money for AIDS charities. And on that ride, I met a lot of different people that were doing much more meaningful things with their lives. And it opened up my eyes to see that there is really a whole world out there, and there's a lot of things that I could be doing with my life that are much more meaningful. Then after 9/11 happened, I really said I need to be, I could have gone in those towers. And then I started to think, like, well, you know, what would be my legacy that I would have left? And it wasn't at all meaningful. And that was when I decided that I needed to do something that mattered in life. And so what I decided to do was to try to use my skills in a meaningful way. And the skills that I had were quantitative and financial. And so I've tried to figure out a way that I could use those in a meaningful way. And so what I decided to do was to specifically teach underprivileged youth and to teach them mathematics, which is a subject that I know.
And did you know right away that you wanted to teach? There are, I'm sure, many ways in which you could have applied those skills. But was it clear to you when you knew you wanted to make a switch that teaching was going to be a part of that?
It was one thing that I thought about, but I made a stop for a year, and I first thought that I would be a good fundraiser because of my financial skills. And I did that for a year, and it definitely felt better than investment banking, but I felt that it was not a direct impact. It was still indirect. It almost felt like just writing the check. So I decided that I had to do something where I was really directly in there, getting my hands dirty, rolling up my sleeves, and I was the one. I wasn't raising the money to help someone else make the difference. I wanted to be the one to make the difference. And that's when I actually saw an ad for the New York City Teaching Fellows on the subway. And I don't know what it was, but it all became so crystal clear at that moment. And that was the avenue that I took. I went through that alternative training program, which was geared for career changers.
So, yeah, maybe you can tell me a little bit about that program, because I suspect that there are people out there who've thought that it would be great to teach, but have wondered how they could possibly, you know, get the qualifications at some late stage in their career.
The New York City Teaching Fellows Program is geared for that. It's run by the New Teacher Project, and it is a method where you can, at the same time that you're getting your master's, which you need a master's in education to be fully certified in the state of New York. But through this program, you can be working on your master's while you're already in the classroom. So what I did is I began in May, and I began an intensive training program over the summer where we took a number of college-level courses towards our certification at that time. We also student-taught in various schools throughout the city at that time. And then in the evenings, we had meetings with what they called our fellow advisors, where we shared our experiences from the classroom. So in the mornings, we would go in the classroom. In the afternoons, we would have our actual classes, our master's degree classes. And then in the evening, we would gather with the other people in our cohort, and we would discuss our experiences in the classroom. So they were very long days, and they were three-part days. They went from 8 o'clock till 6:30. But it was like kind of like boot camp to
right.
get us ready for our own classroom. Now, having said that, you know, We had a lot of preparation. We had as much preparation as you can have in a 3-month period, but I don't think that any of us were honestly really ready for that first day when we were all alone, the only adult in a room full of children that expected us to be in control.
So tell us what that first day was like. What age kids were you with?
My first class was 8th grade, which is challenging under the best of circumstances. So it was scary because there are all these eyes looking at you thinking that you know what you're doing and you're the only one that really knows you don't. So it was pretty scary. And, you know, and also because I was teaching kids from a culture that I did not grow up in. So there were behaviors that I wasn't expecting and that I didn't understand. And there was language and syntax and slang that I didn't understand. So a lot of times I literally did not know what they were talking about. I remember one time distinctly coming into the room and the students had written all over the board, Mrs. Vio is the bomb. Now, in my world, a bomb is a bad thing. So I thought they thought that I was so bad that I was going to self-destruct and explode. It took me 2 days to find out that's a compliment. Apparently, they thought I was very good. Now, I was beating myself up for 2 days until I had the courage to ask someone what a bomb was.
One thing I was curious about is how were you received by your fellow teachers? I've always wondered how career-changing teachers are received by the rest of the faculty.
Yeah, it's not the easiest sell, I got to be honest. The veteran teachers, you know, I guess because that's the route that they took, many of them feel that the only route is to go through your undergraduate, get an education degree, and then get your master's in teaching, and then teach, and then stay in that profession for the rest of your career. So to them, they're suspect of anyone coming through an alternative training program, whether it's Teach for America, which is kids right out of school, whether it's someone that is a career changer like myself. They were just suspect. So, but I think in a lot of ways, you just have to prove yourself. So you just have to prove that you know what you're doing and that you're willing also to be introspective, and you're willing to learn, and you're willing to take advice, and and to be open. So I think you have to win people's respect, but I think that's fair enough in any job in life.
Sure. So you talked about on that first day feeling self-conscious about not knowing what you were doing. At what point did you start to feel like a real teacher?
I think I'd have to say it's a while. I think that I'd have to say probably around, and this is going to sound like a long time, but probably not till about February, did I have faith in myself, that I could control the classroom, that I could explain things in a way that children could understand, that I had down the routines in the class, that such that students knew what to expect and knew the policies and knew the procedures and knew the consequences and knew the rewards. And that I had the right kind of flow to get children to buy into what I was expecting of them. Now, that's gotten easier, every year. Now, but every year, you have to start anew because you have a new audience every year. So every year, you have to go through what the procedures are, what the expectations are. I've got that down to about a month now where they know what to expect from me. But that's a battle that you have to fight every single year because you have an entirely new audience in front of you.
Now, I suspect back when you were a banker and you pondered what it would be like to be doing work that felt very meaningful to you, you probably had a vision of how that would be, how it would feel. How has the reality of teaching compared to that vision that you had back then?
I would say that I honestly have zero regrets giving up the money and the quote-unquote glamour and the lifestyle. None. I've never looked back. There are days that are god-awful, but there were days that were god-awful in investment banking. But what I have now that I've never had before, there are days that are so unbelievably personally satisfying and gratifying. There are days when I know I've made a difference in the world, and I never had that before. There are kids, I had a student today come back who graduated 2 years ago, and she just finished her sophomore year in college at NYU. This is a kid from Harlem, and thank me. I had a kid who already graduated from NYU. I've got a couple that are going to be seniors at Dartmouth next year, and these are kids that keep in touch with me. So that, you don't get that. You don't get that in investment banking. Nobody's going to go back 10 years later and thank a middle manager for helping them out. kids come back and thank me constantly for giving them the tools to be able to not only get into college, but succeed in college.
Right. So I'm curious, if one of, you know, those kids were to come to you and ask for career advice, you know, even maybe say something as pointed as, should I go into finance or teaching, what would you tell them? What would you recommend?
You're talking about those two options?
You know, or just in general, if someone were talking to you about the two paths that you've now spent some considerable time on each, but you were, you know, giving a young person advice, do you find yourself, you know, giving
yeah,
them advice one way
absolutely.
Or another?
Absolutely. A lot. I get, yes, because I teach a lot of seniors, And so this is something that they're thinking about. It's very much in the front of their mind. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of my students, their parents did not go to college. Their parents have jobs, not necessarily careers. So they don't have a lot of people to bounce ideas off of necessarily at home. So, yeah, I get asked those types of questions a lot. And my consistent answer is this, and I honestly believe it, is that the most important thing is to do something that you personally care about. That's the most important thing. Because a lot of kids will say, oh, I think I want to be a lawyer, or I think I want to be a doctor, or some, you know, some kind of thing like that. Or a lot of them think they want to go into business. And I ask them why. And they say, because there's money in it. That's the wrong reason. That's absolutely the wrong reason. And I tell them that honestly, because if you do something simply because you're going to make a lot of money, A, if you're only doing something because of the money, you may not be any good at it. You're going to be good at things that you enjoy, and if you don't enjoy it, you may not be good at it, which means you may not even ever be one to make a lot of money in it. And B, even if you do and you're very good at it, you may not be satisfied, and you may not be fulfilled, and you may not be a very happy person. I truly believe that if you do something that you love, you're going to be great at it, because you enjoy it and it doesn't even feel like work, and hours go by and you don't even realize you're working because it feels like fun, it's because it's so interesting, and the money will come. I've found now, like, yes, I did take a pay cut initially when I went into teaching, a huge pay cut. But now, I really love this job, and I go above and beyond, and I work nothing close to investment banking hours, but I work a lot more than the other teachers around. I've got all kinds of consulting gigs that I've been asked to do. I am now co-writing a textbook in AP Statistics. I have been grading the AP Statistics exams as a consultant for the College Board for years now. There are all these other ways that I'm making money that I'm very slowly inching my way back up to something more resembling the salary that I used to make. But now I'm doing something that I love, that I care about, and that matters.
Interesting. One other thing I wanted to ask about was, you know, in the political discourse of recent months, there's been this sort of Wall Street versus teachers conversation in some ways. And you have a very unique perspective in that you've been on both sides of that. Have you formed really firm views on what needs to happen in terms of teacher salaries or benefits? What are your thinking on that topic?
From where I sit, from my background and from the way that I see it, I absolutely believe that teachers should be, just like the rest of the world, compensated, hired, and fired based on merit. That's my very strong belief. I do not think that teachers should be paid in lockstep pay simply based on seniority, and I do not think that teachers should be protected under any circumstances because of a union. I think that's wrong. I think that it does not serve our students well. And I think many of the problems that we have are because of that, because teachers are protected regardless of their merit. I see it all day long. So I think that's doing a huge disservice to teachers, and I think the teachers that do a better job and that work harder and produce better results should be compensated for that. And I think that would keep a lot of the really, really good teachers in the profession. Because what happens is people that are very, very good have other options. And unless they have chosen to be into teaching because of altruistic reasons like I have, or like I already have a financial nest egg right before I got into this, people that are good are going to have a lot of options. And because it is very frustrating to work with colleagues that are not motivated and don't need to be motivated because they're going to get a raise regardless of whether they produce results or not, that gets really, really frustrating to people that are good. And a lot of them end up leaving for better options, where they actually will get rewarded based on the work that they do and not just based on how long they hang around. So I think that teachers should be evaluated. I think we should be evaluated just like in any other profession. If we're not good, if we don't cut it, if we're not producing results for our clients who are the students, we shouldn't be around. And I think if layoffs do need to happen, they need to happen based on merit and not based on simply some kind of seniority thing, which is ridiculous.
Great. Well, thank you for sharing your views on that. It's sometimes hard to get people to talk to that topic. So I really appreciate your doing that. And I appreciate your sharing your path. It's a very interesting one.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure, really. I hope it helps some other people make their decisions about their careers.
That wraps up the show for today. Thanks again very much to my guest, Jane Vio. Also, Chris Walton, my husband and collaborator. I'm actually editing these shows by myself now, but his technical expertise saves me time and time again when I get into scrapes along the way. Thanks also to everyone who has contributed an essay to WorkStew. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening today. The next episode will be released in 2 weeks, and I hope you'll check it out. It features an interview with Nancy Slotnick, the founder of a New York-based company called CabLite, and she is a dating coach. In the meantime, please let me know what you thought of the show by sending an email to kate@workstew.com, by posting a comment on the WorkStew website, or by writing a review for iTunes. Thanks again, and bye for now.